This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and humor is just another defense against the universe. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. PicoScope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at autel.com. I normally don't like giving away what quotes are. You know, people can either try to figure them out, or if they recognize them, hopefully they get a kick out of them. But I'm going to tell you what this one was. This is from the man, the myth, the legend. No, not Scott Manna. Sorry. I'm sure he said it before. This other great, absolute American treasure, that is Mel Brooks. The reason I'm quoting him is this episode will be about, no, it isn't. Maybe a big letdown, or I should reconsider and try to make an episode on Mr. Brooks, but he turned 100 today. So I thought it's only fitting to quote him. And I mean, what is there to say? Regardless of he's 100 or not, his contributions to the entertainment of us, hopefully us, and particularly me, is immeasurable. And I don't know. I think the first Mel Brooks movie I remember might have been almost on a whim, History of the World Part One. I think it was on TV, and I thought it was going to be a documentary because, I mean, we're talking, I was pretty young, and ends up, it's hilarious. Sid Caesar, if you've listened to this, you know, I think the world of a lot of these historically significant entertainers and comedians or comedic actors, regardless, it doesn't matter. I mean, athletes. So anyways, amazing that he's 100. Even more amazing, he is alive to be in Spaceballs 2, which I hope they do it right. I think they got the right people involved. I really hope they do right by Mel, do right by Spaceballs, do right by John Candy. I'll be very upset if they don't. I mean, awful threat. Matt will be upset too. But yeah, you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife, like, I thought they knocked that clean out of the ballpark as a continuation, as well as paying homage to the great Harold Ramis, who played Egon, who was also a director and screenwriter for major hits. But we can't, I guess I don't want to go down this rabbit hole because I'll be here for hours going on and on about this stuff. I have a different idea for this episode, and it has to do with a video I posted, a short, and I think it's on a lot of platforms, mainly like Facebook. I think Facebook Reels, but I think it's in YouTube Shorts, stuff like that. And it was about a Dodge Durango that was dropped off at the shop for a second opinion, and really wondering, you know, if it indeed needed this part, which I guess I don't want to beat around the bush. The suspicion was that it needed a transmission. Could I program the new, quote unquote, new transmission or TCM with the latest and greatest if it indeed needs the transmission? The complaint was very harsh upshifts and the engine, like, slipping, major slipping. That was the complaints. And there's no DTCs. So could I take a look at it? Do I agree that it needs a transmission? And of course, if they do the transmission, can I program it when they're done? Okay, I hop in this thing and yeah, put it in gear and it slams. Slams. And I'm in the parking lot and I start accelerating towards the street. So I don't know, 50 feet. In 50 feet, I think I'm in third gear. It upshifts from first to third. So on the instrument cluster, you can kind of see, you know, Prindle, if you will. And under the letter D, or I guess if you're in park, there's a letter P to the right. And then put it in the reverse, an R. Okay. Drive shows the gear it's in. So you put in, if you're at a stop, put it in drive, you see one. And then as it upshifts, you can see it going through the gears. By the time I get to the street, I'm in third gear and I'm doing a whopping 15. I thought, wow, this thing really is slipping. That was my knee jerk. There are no DTCs. I notice a green flashing light. It's kind of in the top center of the instrument cluster, a little bit to the left-hand side, a little bit to the driver's side of the on the instrument cluster, and it's flashing. I think it's, auto four-wheel drive green. And I don't know what that means. I think it's a clue, but I wasn't exactly sure what that meant. I take a right onto the street, and I start accelerating. And this is all in that video. And I think I've already explained these videos things. It didn't start out some strategy. The very first one, I just recorded it to send to some friends. I think I sent it to Justin Morgan, Pedro Della Torre, Paul Danner, and Brian Pollock off the cuff. And then Tracy was just wondering what was going on in the shop. We hadn't talked in a while, wondering if we're busy. And I sent her the video just thinking you can look at what I'm doing, messing around. All right, post it up and whatever, I guess. It's popular enough to have it suggested to try to do it more regularly, post up something or send a video in regularly, a short. So however many there are now, this one seems particularly popular, if only because I think the nature of it. And anyways, I turn right onto the street and I start accelerating and I can see us upshifting like crazy. And harsh, like, you know, bang, 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 up to eighth gear, still under 30 miles an hour. But I think I'm over 2000 RPMs. It's pretty insane for about 30 miles an hour. I'm like, start thinking about it. Like, what could cause the transmission to slip in all gears like that? That's not computing. And when I go around corners, it's hopping really bad. And then it dawns on me. This thing's in four low. There's a dial in the center console, very close to like where the armrest would be. Like it's very close. There's another dial on there, right? For putting it in gear. So the second dial further back. And there's two positions. There's auto and then there's four low. It's in the auto position. So as I turn around and start coming back towards the shop, I notice that on the screen, it kind of says shift to neutral to allow completed shift. I'm like, oh man. So is this thing stuck in four low? I pop it in the neutral and you could hear it shift. And now the problem's gone. Green flashing auto lights gone. Of course, there's no DTCs. It shifts normally. There's no more major wheel hop going around corners or driveline bind, if you will. The car's essentially fixed. And then I just kind of start messing around, like reproducing this issue. And it's easily done. So I post the video. I post the video because I had no idea what that flashing green light was. A resource technicians or mechanical and technical specialists often refuse or forget to reference is the owner's manual. If it's there, like, don't get me wrong. A lot of times I can't find the owner's manual or I got to go find it online and sift through the PDF. No big deal. Or on my phone, I suppose, if I pull over to the side of the roads, you know what I mean? But Yeah, I look at the owner's manual, and that's the clue. The clue was it wanted to shift out of four low into auto. It couldn't do it because it was never in neutral long enough. And you start thinking about it, like when people are doing shifts, they're maybe not like us. I think I catch myself when I move a shift lever, I kind of go through the gears, if you will, like park to reverse, reverse to neutral, and then neutral to drive. It's pretty rare that I just grab that handle or dial and just right straight to drive. Boom. I just don't do it. I don't know why. Maybe it's just learned. I'm guessing it's learned from doing this for a living. I just don't do it. But for a customer, just watching customers get in their cars, it's bang right into drive. So it's possible. However, they got it into four low on purpose. I'm guessing on accident. Maybe they got kids, grandkids. I don't know. Somebody moved the dial to four low. It was in neutral long enough to make the shift, and then it was stuck. So fine, that might explain the client or the vehicle owner. What about the shop? They're ready to put a transmission in this vehicle. And if they would have, they wanted to fix the car, it would have still been quote unquote broken. How do you handle that? But we don't have to run it forward that far. How do you get to the point of replacing a transmission for this problem? And I think that's partly why the video is getting more activity than some of the others that are arguably better or have more pertinent information in them or usable information for us. Or I suppose that's my opinion. I think it's because it feels so absurd and so wildly incompetent on the part of either the shop or the mechanical or technical specialist involved in working on the vehicle, diagnosing it. Yeah, okay, fine. By definition, it's incompetent. But let's be real. By definition, incompetent, most of us are incompetent at a lot of what we do. Just deal with it. We use incompetent with such condescension. And when we hear it, we take it so hard. We're so ashamed by that word. Such a negative what connotation to it, or just negative feel associated with it. And I get it. But on the flip side, while we are incompetent, there's probably other explanations at play here. I think the most valid one is tunnel vision. I suppose we could get really fancy and we could start spitting out psychology, right? Confirmation bias, anchoring, and premature closure. I mean, that's about sums it up. So in my mind, and I could be wrong, the anchoring part was the first clue. And this is my interpretation. I don't want to act like I'm some freaking psychologist. I'm not. Margaret listens to this. Margaret Light, if she listens to some of these episodes, she's probably calling or texting me going like, well, not exactly right. And she's the expert. I'm incompetent when it comes to that. But confirmation bias, we need to start with anchoring. Anchoring probably to me was the slipping, the perceived slipping. Put it into gear, hit the accelerator, RPMs go way high and the car ain't moving. That was interpreted as slipping. I don't know if there was a scan tool involved. I don't know. Maybe there was. If there was, did they go to maybe engine RPM graphed against, or I don't know if you even really needed to graph it, but engine RPM versus input, transmission input RPM. That could give you, if there isn't a dedicated slip PID, a torque converter slip PID, if there isn't a dedicated one, that would very much rule out slipping, at least torque converter. And then you could look up gear ratios, I suppose, and get an idea if you have an internal slipping of occurring, which to me in every gear is, borderline impossible. I'm sure now that I've said that, many of you can type out exactly what I'm missing and what could cause it. but consistently that ratio off, like almost 50%, if you will, depending on, I guess, depending on what perspective we want to take, engine RPM versus vehicle speed, that the RPM seems to be about twice as high as it should be, or vehicle speed is about 50% of what it should be versus RPM, something of that nature, right? Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. So, anchoring was that first real bit of data that they got that kind of sold them on the idea that this is internal transmission failure. This thing's slipping like mad. Okay. Confirmation bias would be any and all information gathered, be it feeling, be it, you know, the hearing, their butt sensor, their sense of smell, whatever else they're going to use. Maybe not so much smell in this case, but I think definitely your butt sensor and definitely your ears. And maybe they did look at some scan data and they just decided that that data supported bad transmission. That would be, I think, confirmation bias. The information is really either twisted or only the information that supports your idea of this being a bad transmission is being used. And lastly, you have premature closure. Little to no follow through. I probably have a better example of premature closure that I'll rattle off just a little bit later. I think we probably see far more often. But yeah, minimal, if any, follow-up tests. So that's how they arrive at it. They arrived at it because when they got in the car, once they felt that, once they sensed that, once they thought, oh man, this transmission's hatched, they're done. The diagnosis was done. So yeah, I suppose we could sit on our freaking, you know, high horses and go, oh, how awful. Yeah, okay. If a transmission got put in there and the customer got charged for it, that would have been awful. If a transmission got put in it, didn't fix the car, customer wasn't charged for it, and then the shop really figured out it was just in four low, it sucks for the shop. It sucks for the tech mechanical specialist or specialists involved. It would. I don't wish bad stuff on anybody, but that isn't awful. The customer paid for what time, which I guess most valuable resource, but you know, nothing out of pocket, honest mistake, and a terrific learning opportunity, expensive learning opportunity. I don't know. That's how I guess I define awful is somebody that they paid, you know, awful would be the customer paid for the transmission and then the shop figured out they just needed to let it shift into four low and ship the car, charging them for the transmission. And the customer doesn't know any better. They think, oh my God, this thing shifts wonderful. That would be awful. How often does that happen? And not just transmissions, just in general. How many repairs does that happen? Customers paying for certain things to fix certain problems. They're paying for really confirmation bias, anchoring, and premature closure. And then the real fix is for free. I think that happens a lot. And I get why, because nobody wants to pay that price. Shops don't want to pay that price. But at some point, we want to talk about ethics. And I know I've made the argument that you really don't find economics and ethics in the same sentence. You know, there really is no ethical profit. That's just not a thing. But it is, right? People pay for our services to fix what was broken or to bring the vehicle back to manufacturer specs. That's what they're paying us for. And unethical would be charging them for something it didn't need and then not charging them for what actually fixed the car. I suppose there's situations we could twist that around where it works out in their favor, but how often does that really happen? So the other example I would use, I think common, I don't know if I necessarily need to name like a car line specific. There's some car lines where this is far more common than others, but it comes in with a misfire. You can feel it. Customers complaining about rough idle, rough running, maybe lacks a little bit of get up and go. The mill is flashing and, you know, they want you to fix the car. So bring it in, hook up scan tool, P0, whatever, 301. Pick your car line, coil on plug. What's it need? Coil and plug. How many cars does that happen? How many cars legitimately get fixed doing that? Because that's what's wrong. From a purely probabilistic standpoint, depending on the car line, there's a good chance that's exactly what is wrong. But it's still the same things at play here. It's still confirmation bias. It's still anchoring. It's still premature closure. You may end up right until you're not. It's this make of car. It's got a misfire. Yeah, 9 times out of 10 or more, it is the coil. But you don't do any more testing. You're okay playing, you know, gambling, if you will, or playing the probabilities game. It's still anchoring is, I know what the car line is. I know that there is a high failure rate. It's got a misfire, and I know which cylinder it's on. Boom, you're set. That's the anchoring. That's the information. That's all the information you needed to call a coil and or spark plug. And it's probably both, right? If it's either a coil or a coil and plug. And then, you know, what's the confirmation bias is simply, again, I can feel the misfire. It's really common. I don't know. You're looking at the live misfire graph. Maybe smell a little bit of fuel, further fueling the theory that it's ignition. You know, put the coil and plug on it. That's super common. That happens all the time. And people are right most of the time. But when they're not, then what? And it's not like taking anyone to task, but it's the same type of thing where there isn't more testing. There isn't any other data looked at will be used strictly to support the initial idea of it being a coil and spark plug. So it's not so different than the wanting to put a transmission in a vehicle that's put in locked in four low, other than the ticket, right? The price difference, the price discrepancy is what really breaks this comparison. But on purely theoretical, pure process, I don't really see a difference. So it's really hard for me to get judgy. And again, they didn't do it. They didn't put the transmission in. Even if they did, like, did they charge the customer for it? Yes, got a problem with it. Got a big problem with it. Didn't charge the customer for it? Man, that sucks. That is a tough, tough lesson. It actually reminds me of this Mini Cooper. I think I talked about this one time. When it first came in, the complaint was low boost or lack of power. And it had low boost DTCs. And I think it had one cam crank correlation DTC. Blow the codes out of it, go drive it, would set low boost codes over and over and over. Never set that cam crank correlation code again. on my clock. And I thought about cam crank timing for a millisecond, and I was moving on to something to do with boost. Sealing, have leaking, you know, intercooler or hoses or something like that, clamps, connections. Finally, I mean, I did a lot of testing. I didn't feel like I was hung up on any one thing. I kind of wanted to rule out the turbo, but I couldn't. I got stuck where I felt like some weird failure in that turbo was causing this to not have the ability to build boost. So we quoted her a turbo. We didn't put a turbo on. We quoted it. And the client decided to hold off. It was still drivable, but she's going to park it and think about it or save up money. And then I think a friend of hers suggested a different shop. And yeah, they went crazy. Well, I guess it is the lack of competence. So it was an honest mistake. Again, it didn't set that cam crank correlation, but it turns out that's a common problem on these. That was a tough lesson. I called the client. I explained the situation. I wanted to refund all of the money that we charged her for diagnostics. And if the car hadn't been fixed yet, I would like to make things right. And we were allowed that opportunity. They did. They brought the vehicle back. We made it right. They're ecstatic. I learned a really, really, really tough lesson, both just at the shop and online. You know, it was why they posted invoices with people's names on my old, I don't know. They're calling me incompetent while doing that. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it feels good to know something or figure out something somebody else didn't. But yeah, that was rough. Yeah. My argument was still the same. Even if we bolted that turbo on and it didn't fix the car, she wouldn't have been charged for that turbo. She'd have had probably a brand new turbo on her vehicle for free. And then I would have had to really figure out what's wrong with it. And hopefully I would have actually figured it out. Got to skip the whole new turbo thing with this direction, but yeah, it sucked. I don't know which one I would rather have to be quite honest. But yeah, tunnel vision. It's something to be very concerned about. It's something to be aware of. Not so much concerned about. It happens, but be aware. Just think about, add some steps to your diagnostic process, which is, what is my confirmation bias? Am I anchoring and am I premature closing? Prematurely closing my process here. Those are very valid questions to ask, and I strongly, strongly urge you to do so. They may suck to answer, but I strongly, strongly urge you to do so. And to wrap this episode up, it makes perfect sense. I can't say that my email has been flooded with these questions, just a couple of them, but Mount Rushmore of Mel Brooks films. I would think this would be easy, but maybe it won't. Blazing Saddles is a masterpiece. Spaceballs, then I would say, I guess when we're talking about Mel Brooks films, right? We're talking about ones he's in and directs, right? The classic Mel Brooks. So what do we got? Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs. I think you got to go with The Producers. And then last but not least, it's a tough one. I'm sure some of you want me to say Robin Hood, Men in Tights, but as much as I do like that movie, to put it on the Mount Rushmore just seems unreasonable. I got to go with History of the World Part 1. Maybe I'm biased because it was the first movie of his I remember really seeing and not really knowing it was his, but it's good to be the king. Yeah, Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs, The Producers, and History of the World Part 1. Yeah, that would be that's my Mount Rushmore of Mel Brooks films, and I got to level with you. I kind of hope one could have be bumped by Spaceballs too. I doubt it's possible because I think all four are very, very strong movies. I didn't put Young Frankenstein on there because Mel Brooks is involved, but that was really a Gene Wilder film. Another treasure, maybe for a different episode, but I know Mel Brooks is involved in Young Frankenstein. I just don't really know that I can call it really a Mel Brooks film like the four on the Mount Rushmore. So that's why I didn't put that on there. To me, that's more of a Gene Wilder film. So thank you very, very much for listening. Thank you so very much to our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.